A long time ago, like a long, long time ago, in a galaxy far, far, far away, a dude said, let's make a movie. And then the prop guy was like, let's stick a bunch of random crap in it. And now we talk about it here at the Prop History Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Prop History Podcast. My name is Mike.
I'm Greg.
And we talk about props more or less. So,
yeah.
But today is a great day, Greg, because you know what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I do actually.
What is it?
It's Star Wars.
I'm glad you knew.
We're talking about A New Hope or just Star Wars.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask, really.
Right,
yeah, because it wasn't A New Hope until they re-released it in 1983.
I don't know, but people get the subtitle. Persnickety about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that get a lot very angry about Star Wars for a lot of different reasons. And there's a lot of controversy about certain things, particularly with the special edition that George Lucas did.
Yeah.
For a lot of good reasons. But that's not the point of this. The point is to talk about the props and the special effects from Star Wars. Episode 4 from 1977.
Yes.
Sometimes called A New Hope.
Yep. I was, 4 and a half when that... I actually don't remember seeing it in the theater. I must have, but I...
I was negative 3 years old when
so
that movie came out.
Weren't there?
I wasn't even there yet.
Yeah.
So I will...
Now, I very much remember seeing Empire in the movie theater, but...
I have some vague memories of seeing Return of the Jedi as a kid at the base theater in March Air Force Base in California.
Nice.
I do remember that I was scared terribly of the Rancor monster.
Oh sure, yeah, he's big and monstrous.
He's big and monstrous and rancorish.
But the guy, he cried so much.
I know. I love that somebody like did a web comic of that guy like devastated that his pet Rancor, like he shows him raising him from birth,
right,
and he's like training him, and then he gets his neck crushed and the dude's like devastated, but then the next panel is him like nursing the Rancor back to health, and
aww,
like, and it's like this just this sweet relationship between this dude and his pet Rancor
who's had a frontal lobotomy
pretty much. Yeah.
But that's in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, that's not what we're here for.
A New Hope.
Yeah, with so A New Hope, just like, so we'll start it this way. Like, what prop stands out from you,
oh,
for
man,
you from
geez,
the
oh,
New
freaking
Hope?
Pete.
Like, if you had to pick one that really pops out from that movie.
I mean, the 7-year-old always is going to be the lightsaber.
Right.
You know, like, that was, I think that was the first, one of the first props I ever recreated because I was in high school. I would have been a sophomore because it was not... be morbid, but it was the same year, same time frame my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a science teacher who I actually, weirdly enough, I'm still friends with today, Mr. Drumright. And he's like, you know, in Star Wars, the lightsaber was a Graflex flash handle from an old camera. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you know, like Jimmy Olsen would poof, you know, in the light. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. I had no idea. And then later that day, I was in my photography class, and I was talking to Mr. Slover about it. He goes, yeah, we probably, I'm just hitting the thingy here. He goes, we probably have some over in the cabinet there, and sure as hell, there was a Graflex flash handle in the cabinet. And I'm like, can I have that? He goes, yeah, it's junk. You can do whatever you want with it. And so I took it, and I made leather straps for the grips. And I think that's all I did to it. And then I had my dad died, and I sold it for $50, and because I like needed gas money and stuff to get to the funeral and stuff like that. Shit, 16-year-old shouldn't have to worry about, but
right.
I did. And years later, like people really started figuring out what it was, and photography stores or camera stores would not sell them to you if they thought for a second you knew anything about Star Wars. Yeah. Because they just threw these things away. I'm going on a long story here. But they would just throw these things away because they were worthless. Nobody was using them. But then they became valuable to them because people were destroying them by... And so I was in a camera store in Hastings, Nebraska. And I'm like, would you happen to have a Graflex flash handle? And he looks at me. I'm like, my grandfather left me his speed press camera, and it doesn't have the flash. And I've always wanted to complete this.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I got one. And $50. And I'm like, that seems like a fair number to me because that's right. What I got for the other one. I keep hitting this damn thing. And he sent me home packing with a box of bulbs. And that's how I have my number one Graflex. And then I think my second Graflex, I traded for it.
Right.
Yeah. So. So there you go. Very long answer to a short question. What would be yours? What stands out?
Well, as a kid, I grew up loving filming models. So for me, the first thing I look at whenever I watch a sci-fi movie, particularly from that period, is always the filming models, because that's what really pops out to me. And it's Tantive IV.
Oh, yeah.
The filming model for Tantive IV, which most people don't know, the actual filming model that has a Playboy centerfold in it.
I knew that.
Yeah. A lot of people are unaware of that. But if you have to get up close to the front of the ship, which they barely show in the movie anyway, and it's too far away anyway. It's a tiny little, like...
Yeah.
A quarter of an inch tall replication of a centerfold. I loved that model. And then there, many years later, there was a traveling tour that they still do of all the stuff from Star Wars, and there's a lot of filming models in there. And they actually had Tantive IV there, so I was very excited to see that. Nice. But that was the thing that always stood out to me were the models. And like when I was 9, I watched a PBS show about the making of the models from 2001, or not 2001, Space Oddity, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And it really piqued my interest as to how models were made in Hollywood. And that is one thing I always focus on is the models.
So my favorite model, and I have a replica sitting just over there,
yep.
Is the escape pod.
Because it's made from chicken buckets.
Right? Well, I think they're actually... Were it chicken or paint buckets?
It was the top half of it is if I'm not mistaken, is a paint bucket, but the bottom half is a chicken bucket.
From KFC.
From KFC. And that particular model of bucket is specific to like the 1975, 1980 era.
Yeah.
And of course, they're paper, so most people chucked them in the trash.
Sure.
But apparently, it was just inspired by the model maker's lunch. Like, they got a bucket of KFC, and they're like, well, you know what? I like that shape.
The Millennium Falcon was based on a hamburger.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It was, the first design of it, though, looked very much like the Eagle from Space 1999.
Which is not an attractive, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. It's just not an attractive.
It looks really cool, and I love the story was that Ralph McQuarrie, the legendary concept artist, right? He came up with all the art, but he made Star Wars look the way it does.
Right.
And Ralph McQuarrie came up with the initial design for the Millennium Falcon, which looked like the Eagle Lander from Space 1999 in its own way. And they sent these designs off, and they sent them to England as well because they had to build a full-size one. And they looked at it and like, you guys are just ripping off Space 1999. But the internet didn't exist back then. And a lot of these young kids that were building these models were like, what the hell is Space 1999? We've never heard of it. So they had to redesign it, and the chief model maker for A New Hope had 6 weeks, I think,
oh, wow.
to completely change the design of it. And it was the apocryphal story, and I don't know how true it is. It was George Lucas took a bite out of a hamburger, and he goes, you know what? Let's make it look like a cheeseburger or a hamburger. And that's why it has that look that it does. And it's also supposed to rotate.
Huh.
So the flight deck... The cockpit is supposed to rotate, and then it would fly 90 degrees out from what we see because he wanted it to look like a sunfish.
Isn't that kind of like how the B-wing is?
Yeah, how the B-wing rotates. So, yeah, so it was the same concept. And they actually looked at doing it for the movie, but they couldn't make it work. So they abandoned it. But that was that's why the gun positions are in such weird places. Because like when you see them go into the gun positions, they're going down and up.
Yeah.
But if the ship was 90 degrees out from where it was, they'd just be going to the side.
That would be awesome.
Right? And, you know, there people have done concept art of it, but it was abandoned early on. But it was part of the initial design.
So a couple of weeks ago, I feel kind of guilty saying this, but a couple of weeks ago, I had enough and took my wife to Hollywood Studios down in Florida. And we got to ride the Millennium Falcon ride, which is amazing. They did such a great job, but they have a full-size version of the Millennium Falcon.
What's it look like? What's it like in real life?
It's orgasmic. It's the Millennium Falcon, and I am not a studio scale modeler. I did build this escape pod using all correct castings of all correct parts, and a few actual correct parts, and so I've gotten to know the parts just a smidge, just a hair. But some of them are on the Millennium Falcon.
Right, blown up to full size.
And it's just like, oh my God, there's that tank part that everybody knows about.
Yeah. I know the Universal Greebly is on there too.
Yeah.
And my wife and I have been talking about going down there, and I really want to go see it just basically so I can walk underneath it and look at all the model parts.
Well, you can't walk underneath it.
Well, get close to it at least and look at all the model parts that are there and that are blown up to full size, which would be quite the trip, I think.
Yeah, I'll happily go back.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing. It was like being in Star Wars. And I definitely recommend the Blue Milk and the Rondo... Rondo wrap.
Rondo wrap?
Yeah.
What does the Blue Milk taste like down there?
I don't know. It's like just a frozen, I think they use like soy milk, fruity. I don't know. It was good. I liked
it. It's like that's kind of neat.
I mean, it's not Beru's, but you know, it was good.
It's not Aunt Beru's.
Yeah. So.
Fair enough. excuse me. Now you've been to a couple. Have you been to any of the sets where any of that was filmed for A New Hope? Or
no,
was that only
not
for
a
the
New
prequels.
Hope. Yeah,
I know you've been to a lot of different set locations.
Yeah, the only Star Wars place I've ever been to is Skellig Michael for the
right
episode.
Which you gave me a rock from
seven yeah. and eight. Yeah,
yeah,
or seven, eight, and nine, or I don't know. But yes, I've been there, but I haven't. Though that's definitely on the bucket. Like my number one thing on my bucket list for travel is to visit Tunisia. Like,
to go to the filming location for Mos Eisley, yeah.
So,
which is still there.
Yeah, like I guess a couple of guys a few years ago kind of restored Luke's homestead, and I understand there's a moisture evaporator there, and
yeah, I think it's one of the things that I read about it was when they were going and scouting it out for the prequels, they were looking at the original location and what was still left, and if they could use it, and they just so happened to be walking through the local area where folks lived, you know, not too far from there. And some dude's shed was the door of the cantina.
Oh, wow.
And he's just like, yeah, I picked it up. Well, you guys left it there. So we just picked it up and left it there.
I'll set this up for you to do a plug. But so the Krayt Dragon,
yeah.
You know, they left that there. And apparently, like, to this day, just random pieces are found in like people's roofs and stuff like that.
And there's there's actually a company called minimuseum.com that sells bits and pieces of it, like small pieces of it. And they ended up contacting me because of the stuff I do on TikTok, and they ended up giving me a couple pieces of it. So, which I gave one to you.
Yes,
and
I love it.
So,
it's awesome.
But I think it's awesome that was not made for Star Wars. It was actually made for a 1975 Disney film called One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing, which if you go back and watch it, it is problematically racist. But they built this skeleton that's supposed to be like a brachiosaur or something like that. And they just sort of left it laying around. And the folks at the Star Wars production were like, you don't need this, yoink. And then they abandoned it in Tunisia.
I was looking at this company's website, and they were telling the story, and I believe that they said that they had to ship stuff over, so they just threw it in the cargo container or something and said, we'll take this too?
Yeah, they just hucked it in. Like, they didn't ask, they didn't do any paperwork on it, they just picked it up and took it.
You would think at some point somebody would be like, where the fuck is our dinosaur?
Right?
I swear to God we had a dinosaur.
I imagine too that they were like, when they first started out, they like saw this thing and they're like, that is cool. That's going to look cool in my house, you know? Yeah. And then they just swiped it, you know, and yeeted it into the trailer. And then at some point they're like, hey, we need some background while C-3PO is meandering through the desert. Let's throw this thing up on a hill. All right, give it a name. Krayt Dragon. Yeah. Cool. And then that's how that started.
So I'm hoping that we get to have a conversation with a friend of mine here soon, who I'm not going to drop names, but I keep hitting stuff.
I know.
I'm so excited.
It's usually me that's
hand.
Running into stuff.
So my friend, I'm hoping we're going to get to talk to, when he was a kid, he convinced his parents to take him to Tunisia. And that was one of the things. That And Gus Lopez. I don't know if you know who Gus Lopez is.
I know the name, yeah.
So Gus Lopez is a huge, huge, huge Star Wars collector. He owns the Death Star. Apparently, the Death Star ended up in the trash. Somebody pulled it out. Gus Lopez now owns it. The original Death Star. And he's a tech giant. I think he's from, works with like Google. And but he is like one of the biggest, most important collections of Star Wars memorabilia on the planet. And I'm very proud to say that one of the pieces that I've made that fell into the Star Wars world is in his collection. So that excites me.
Oh, that's cool.
But he also was one of those people that really made me want to go to Tunisia, because he did. And, you know, and they also filmed Raiders of the Lost Ark in Tunisia. And so, yeah. I'm just waiting for, you know, ISIS to stop being a big thing. And although I might just go, I might just say screw it
and just go.
And yeah. Go. Yeah.
Well, I love the story of the Death Star too, because at the end of filming of A New Hope, they put all of the props, or at least a large portion of the props and the filming models, into storage. And while they were doing post-production, you know, they decided they didn't want to pay for storage anymore. The movie hadn't come out yet, so they didn't know if it was going to be a hit. They had no idea. So they ordered everything to be discarded. And some of the guys that worked there, you know, the crew showed up and they took bits and pieces that they wanted to keep. But then when they were done, like the folks that worked at that storage garage, they kept stuff. And one guy kept the Death Star, and it was missing some stuff off of it, but he took it home.
It
was the disc from where the laser was. And he took it home to his mother's antique shop in Missouri, where it sat outside in the elements for years. And then somebody was like, hey, that looks really cool. I want it for my honky-tonk in Branson, Missouri.
Wow.
Where it stayed for a long time. And when it was closing down, the guy that you just mentioned,
Gus Lopez,
knew it was there. And when he found out the place was closing down, he went there to go see if he could buy it. And he was able to purchase it because they were using it as a trash can.
Oh, my God.
Like the hole in it, they were just... it was just refuse was discarded in it. So it eventually got fully restored. And I know it was on display at MoPop in Seattle, a museum I really want to go to, because Paul Allen's sci-fi collection is there.
Well, Gus lives in Seattle.
Yes, I know. And I'd love to see that too, but I don't know Gus at all.
I have a standing invitation. So oh, if that'd you be ever neat. Want to go,
yeah, can... I do. I really want to see the Death Star. And
once COVID ends.
Yeah, when COVID ends, and sometime in 2030. And then at this rate anyway.
Yeah, but we both got vaccinated.
Yeah, we're both vaccinated. We should be fine. But I love that story of how that because it ended up as a trash can and a honky-tonk is the only reason it survived.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it just wouldn't.
Totally. It's just weird. I mean, this movie is full of just found pieces. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, what's gotten out there, what hasn't, what survived, what wasn't have. What hasn't. I know Jason Eaton has made it his personal mission to create the most accurate replica of filming miniatures for the X-Wings, you know, using real source material. And it's interesting having conversations with him and seeing the people that he's gotten to know in Star Wars world, because, like, he knows everything there is to know about how they did it, to the point where that I like, they'll come, Lauren Peterson, I'm just dropping a name, like, will be like, how did we do this? And Jason will be like, oh, on this day you did this. And because I, you know, like, and Lauren's like, oh yeah, that sounds right. I mean, Jason.
That sounds good, yeah.
Jason is just the foremost, and I don't mean to say, make Jason sound dweebish at all, but he is easily the foremost expert on those filming miniatures on the planet.
And also an unbelievably talented model maker.
Oh, my God,
just
yeah.
With goes without saying, but he's I've spent literal hours, like, just parsing through pictures of his work, just in awe of it. You know, I consider myself to be at least an okay model maker, but he's, like, on another level of it, so.
Yeah, I've got my the escape pod. It's, like, 98% built, and I can't bring myself to paint it. So
right.
I gotta get over my fear of painting.
Yeah, it's not painting's not hard. The best part is you just paint over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've got the paints. So I just need to figure it out.
Just sit down and do it one day. Yeah. Because it's a cool model. It's actually other than Tantive IV, it's probably my other favorite filming model of the story behind it largely.
I would love to do a 5-foot version of the Millennium Falcon.
I would too. And we'd have to hang it from the ceiling in your shop, if nothing else.
Space.
Yeah. So. I want a 30-foot long shop, and I'm going to jump the shark here on the because I want to rebuild. And I have all of the designs for it and the plans for it. I want to build the 30-foot long filming model from Event Horizon.
Well, I have a 30. This is 30 feet.
I know.
But you should do bigger.
I need to probably do like at least 50 feet.
Yeah.
And then hang it from the ceiling because that's what else am I going to do with it? But I really want to have that filming model, but it's destroyed. It doesn't exist anymore. But speaking of filming models.
Yeah.
I digress, as we often do.
So, yeah. So, Star Wars, ripe with props.
Pick one. Just off the top of your head.
First thing that popped into my head was the droid collar.
The droid collar?
The cobalt, is it a cobalt flash?
Yeah.
That they use for that?
It's cobalt flash. And then the one that pops into my head as far as found parts goes is one of the most famous from it, the DL-44.
Yeah.
Which changes scene to scene because they made so many versions of it for the movie. But it's, of course, based on a C-96 Mauser, the broom handle Mauser pistol.
The Rocketeer gun.
And then the flash hider or flash suppressor, whatever you want to call it, is from an MG-81 machine gun, which it was a twin machine gun with one trigger. It had two machine guns with one trigger, but that was what the flash suppressor was from. And then I can't remember. It's a Reinhold scope, I think, and I can't remember what the mount was.
I know some of the parts come from the Invisible V8 model kit.
And the grill on the front was one of the most recent parts to be identified, and it's from a Vernon Tomtit. Wood balsa and plastic model kit. And that was one of the most recent things to be ID'd. Yeah. Because nobody knew what it was on the front, that grill that's on the front of the magazine well. But that gun, the hero that we all know as the stereotypical DL-44 that is still owned by Bapti Armories, actually started life in a Frank Sinatra film called Naked Runner because it was modified with a bull barrel and it was a carbine version of that that had a buttstock and a longer barrel. And then they cut it down to make the DL-44. But it started life in Frank Sinatra's hands. And then went from the chairman of the board to Han Solo.
Fly me to the moon.
Basically, yeah. And I just love that gun has that much history to it. But it's funny that, because Bapti Armories has hundreds of thousands of firearm components. And those guns were reused after Star Wars. So the original parts from that are scattered somewhere throughout Bapti Armories, but they're not put together anymore.
I think my favorite gun is probably always going to be just the Sterlings that they used for the
E-11s.
The E-11s.
The Rebel carbine that they had when they fought against the Stormtroopers on Tantive IV was also based on the same Sterling. And I love that those were all MGC, like Model Gun Company model kits. But then some of them were blank firing because you could see the spent casings ejecting from them when they fire.
There is a guy that I follow on Facebook whose name I can't remember, like Warhammer Gun Company or something. I'll have to look it up. But give him a bit of a plug. But he makes the most beautiful gun replicas that I've ever seen.
Those all metal ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so beautiful. Aren't they only like $350 too or something?
Yeah, they're ridiculously cheap. Now I'm sitting here stalling, but yeah, I don't know. But they are beautiful, and yeah, under $400 for a complete kit, and he custom machines them. Mm-hmm. And it's Field Marshal something or other.
Yeah, whenever I get around to have money, I'll end up buying one of those because I really want a high quality E-11. I've got a deposit in with a guy for a really high quality DL-44 right now.
Oh, nice. Blasterfactory.com.
Blasterfactory, that's him.
I think he's got like two different websites.
Yeah.
His the DL-44 blaster kit in stock, like anywhere from under $300 to $835.
Yeah.
$899. And then the E-11, the kit that I desperately want. So I'm waiting till like somebody says, here's $400 or so.
Does he have like a high end version of the kit as well? Or is it just, it's only like two versions of it, I think.
Well, like, so the basic kit is $299 to $349.
Mm-hmm.
And then the premium kit is $4.99, and then there is another version that's $6.99 to $7.49. Mm. And I think that's all put together, but not painted. And,
right.
But it's beautiful. So blasterfactory.com, check them out if you want. I don't know. I don't know anything really about them other than the stuff looks really good. And he's always posting pictures on Facebook of the process. And so it looks like he's making stuff. So.
And that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is top quality consumer advice from Prop History Podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Blaster Factory is not an unofficial sponsor of
Prop History Podcast. No, our only unofficial sponsor is Prop Store right now.
Prop Store of London, yes, yep. Who sells nothing but legit props and
they do actually sell some replicas sometimes, but they make it clear they're replicas.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have seen him pop some replicas on there. Actually, one of Steve's, our friend Steve Loboito, one of his alien suits sold on there at one point.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's about as accurate as
Yeah, you can't really get any better than the ones that were on screen anyway.
Yeah.
So.
And his are probably actually better than the ones
that
were on screen.
I can't wait till I'm able to put down money on that so he can start
building
mine.
One day.
Hopefully sooner than I think, truth be told.
Really?
Maybe.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, like within a month.
Really?
Yeah.
Getting that big, rich, and famous contract the Muppets got.
Hopefully. That's what I'm after. That's a reference.
Yes.
We just added the Muppets into a Star Wars podcast. Fantastic.
Well, didn't you watch the Star Wars people on the Muppets when you were a kid? That was awesome.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But my clearest memory is from the opposing series, sci-fi series, which is Star Trek, and it's actually Reading Rainbow.
Episode
when LeVar Burton went to the set of Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's
awesome. It's like a highlight of my childhood, I won't lie.
He looks just like the guy that played Geordi.
You know what? It's surprising how much he looks like Geordi, and also how seemingly immortal he is, because he does not seem to age much.
No, I've met him a couple of times, and a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a god, and you know, like.
Oh, he's a fantastic human being too. Just absolutely love everything he does. I really wish they had brought back Reading Rainbow because they were talking about doing it, and then it just sort of fell flat.
He does a podcast with short stories that sometimes, if I'm in the shop, I'll just turn on and listen to, and then I forget what I'm making because I'm paying attention to him.
I also love how much Brent Spinner ends up on that same podcast too. Like he's just a guest on there all the time. Cause
that's awesome.
He's like, I got nothing better to do. I'm Brent Spinner. I can do what I want.
Hey, Brent. So Star Wars.
Yeah. Back to Star Wars.
So in my shop right now, I've got a couple of Star Wars projects that I'm working on. I just finished my Han Solo and Carbonite, which is from Empire. We'll talk about that. God dang it. I don't normally talk this much with my hands. But
Star Wars excites you. It's clear.
It does.
Yeah.
I'm excited. But right now in my shop, I am building a full-size R2-D2.
Mm-hmm.
And I am building the Jarnac table from, or the hollow chest table, or whatever you want to call it, from the Millennium Falcon, where Chewie's like, you know, playing C-3PO with the little hollow chest pieces.
Wookiees don't like to lose. That was dreadful. I love it.
So I'm hoping to finish. I got my 3D printer, my resin printer, my Ilugu Mars, up and running today, and so I'm going to reprint all the little keys because I printed the wrong ones.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I could just take them to sander, but you know, like, why not spend the next week, you know, redoing
just running them out? Yeah.
But like R2-D2, like. My favorite thing about any movie or talking about props is always found things. Like, that's always going to be my favorite thing because, like, I can track that down and own the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing for me about R2 is, and my favorite thing is those the holo projectors on his head where, you know, they, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
Yep.
And those, if you don't know, which I'm sure, well, you know.
I do know.
were Viscount reading lamps out of old airplanes. So, like, when you're on the plane and you're like, I can't see my magazine, I'm going to turn the light on above my head. That's what they were.
Yeah, the for those who don't know, the Vickers Viscount was a transport aircraft. It was an early airline.
I always say that word wrong.
It's fine.
Because it's spelled V-I-S-C-O.
Yeah, and you Viscount. Would, like, for us as Americans, we would pronounce it that way, but because it's British, it's pronounced differently, and it's Viscount.
So
yeah, but yeah, the Vickers Viscount reading lamps from the airline or the airliner version of it, the air passenger version of it. And my understanding is there's out in California in Bakersfield, there's a wreck of one that you see in a ton of different movies because they always use an old aircraft junkyard in a lot of. There's a Vickers Viscount in there that still has all of its reading lights in it, but they won't let me to get it.
So somebody, I think actually Steve Lavoito, speaking of him, he tracked those down years and years ago, and I don't know what they were going for then, but now to get a real one is.
Astronomical.
$1,000 each, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt, $1,000 each. Now, that seems like the standard price anymore for an actual found part for a lot of stuff from Star Wars anymore.
So, found parts, Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber.
Yes.
Now, I was a part of the RPF while most of those things were discovered. I wish I had my lightsaber in my hand, and I could probably go get it. But actually, I'm gonna do that because I wanna look at this.
So he's gonna walk over to his wall and actually get his Obi-Wan lightsaber that he has. He's got a whole rack of lightsabers, as a matter of fact. Rack of lightsabers.
All right, so I'm back
from outer space.
Huh?
You said you're back from outer space.
Yeah. Sorry. So when this, you can't see this.
No, this is excellent radio right here.
Like my face.
Right.
Face for radio.
Yeah.
But when this first came, you know, like on the RPF, I've been on the RPF since like 1997. And when we first started like digging into this, like people had all of these theories about what things were. I think this middle area just north of where the lightsaber come out, I think people thought this was a... motorcycle hand grip.
Oh, like the knurled part on Obi-Wan's lightsaber? Yeah.
Which is what?
It's a number one Mark III British rifle grenade from World War I.
There you go.
Deactivated, of course.
And then we started figuring out that the pommel is a turn handle from an armored shank, like a faucet knob.
Yeah. It's a bathroom faucet too, isn't it?
Yes. So I got a story about that. My nose is running. It's cold in here. I think I know where some are in the United Kingdom.
It's like a hostel somewhere, isn't it?
Don't say that much, but yes. don't say anything.
I can edit that out.
Yeah, edit that out. Bleep that out. It's a bleep in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And so my buddy and I have this plan to rent a couple of rooms for a night and go in with a bunch of faucet handles.
And just basically redo their plumbing.
And redo their plumbing, yeah. this lightsaber, this is... Jeff Parks made this for me years and years ago before we knew a whole lot about it. But right after we figured out these were armored shanks faucet handles, I was able to track some down that were... newer versions of it. They look almost identical, but they're not the original pop metal ones. I think this is just plastic that's been chrome plated, and had him make this for me. So this isn't, which you can't see, look it up online and follow along with me. I'm working at the butt end of it. This is a armored shank faucet handle, and then this thing above that is a cog out of a machine gun, right?
It's a booster from a 303 Browning machine gun.
So what does a booster do?
In that specific weapon, I don't know its function for that booster because I haven't looked into what that piece's function is. So I can't answer that, sadly.
The next part of it would be the clamp off of a Graflex, the same thing that Luke's lightsaber was made out of, and... it would also have the bubbles from a calculator, just like Luke's lightsaber does. And then the grenade piece. And then finally, the part that the lightsaber actually comes out of is a thruster from a...
As I understand it, it's a fuel nozzle from a Rolls-Royce Derwent engine.
Yeah.
But... there was a guy recently on the RPF that bought a Derwent engine, and he bought it for not only those, but also for the burn cans, which also make up the head of IG-88 and IG-11.
Well, and
but in the cantina, they're also behind the bar.
Yeah.
And he discovered that that part, that specific part, the fuel nozzle, changes from model to model of the Derwent engine because the ones in the engine he bought are not correct.
So I actually worked on that particular engine. The collector that, if it's who I think it is, because he had the exact same issue. The collector who bought that engine is a guy in Texas, and I was visiting him, and he had it there, and they were taking it apart. And so, like, I'm like, can I just sit here and take shit off of it? He's like, yeah. And it's like 130,000 degrees in Texas, and I'm sitting there, like, trying to dig into it. And I didn't get to any of the interesting stuff, but it was kind of fun to help get to that part.
Take those old engines apart, yeah.
And it was, man, like, it was a cool thing to sit in front of this big-ass Rolls-Royce Derwent engine. Yeah. And I still would love to have one of the IG-88 heads, but...
When I was going to A&P school, which is airframe and power plant school, when I became an aircraft mechanic, the school that I went to actually had one of those engines in it.
Oh, wow.
But I was not a prop collector at the time. I wasn't involved in the prop community anyway, so that didn't really interest me at all. But I just remember the tag on the front of it, Rolls-Royce, Derwent, all that. And I remember distinctly looking at the burn cans. And one of my teachers was like, they made Star Wars props from this thing. And then I was like, neat, cool, because at the time I wasn't that interested in this stuff. It wasn't until years later that I kicked myself because they threw it away.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So I have a 3D printed version of the IG-88 or IG-11 head. Droid Division, if you find him on Etsy or look for on Facebook. Man, we're just plugging all kinds of people.
Yeah, this is the plug show, apparently.
But there's so many people that have invested so much into creating these replicas.
Yeah, and some of us, like particularly me, somebody who's kind of new into this because I've only been in a couple of years, I'm literally standing on the shoulders of giants that, like, I'm using other people's work to do what I do now. Because so much of it came before me, like so much was discovered before I got into it. So
I'm going to have to let these people know that listen to our podcast. Dave, who does Droid Division, he designs 3D printable files for droids and stuff from Star Wars, and they are amazing. I have 3D printed the battle droid from the Phantom Menace, and I've printed the head for the IG-88/11, because really that's my favorite part. I have no desire of doing the whole thing, but he has files available to buy on his Etsy store for an entire, you know, IG-88.
It's a part of me that wants an entire IG-88.
It's super cool. Yeah. Like the things that these guys have done with it has made it all just phenomenal. So he has a, check out his Facebook page. It's Droid Division, and like the people post and they're really good. Oh, we'll talk about this more when we do Empire, but he just finished doing the probe droid from the Hoth battle scene, full size. And one of my buddies on there who I've gotten to know through all of this has finished printing it.
Oh my God.
And I mean, the thing is,
how many rolls of filament was that?
It was a lot, like, yeah. 20, 40.
Yeah, some, like, insane amount of filament, yeah, used to make that, I can imagine.
But it's I'll show you pictures, and can we link things to...
We absolutely can, yeah.
We should add some links to
this. We'll put some links in the description of this podcast for all the stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
So when you sit down and listen to it, just go into the description, and you'll find all the links for everything we're saying.
I'll send you some links.
Okay.
So, you know, it's such a fun world as a prop builder and collector to play in. Just trying to, you know, recreate, and because so many found things were used. Like, I have a replica behind me that I made of the interrogator droid from the scene where Princess Leia is, you know, being held, and they send in, you know, Dr. Ball, you know. And I probably spent, I guess, 2 years tracking down all of those parts. And if you look at that, like, the head of it is an R2-D2 dome. The bottom of it's just a hemisphere. There is a set of forceps on there. There is a tonsillectomy tool. There is a hypodermic syringe, a refillable glass hypodermic syringe. There are... some test tube clamps.
Isn't there like a landing light from a British airfield on it, too?
Yeah, that's on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then on the back of it, there is a prehensor, which we've never identified which one exactly it is, but it's a, it's basically like a 1940s, 1950s, probably, artificial hand for somebody who lost their hand.
Wow.
And but that's the only part, I think, pretty much we haven't really identified.
That has yet to be identified on it. Yeah, because actually, surprisingly, while we're sitting here talking about droids, I mean, the room is full of droids, but that the movie is full of droids, too, an enormous amount of them, too, because, like, everyone's favorite, Gonk droid, which is actually just, it wasn't just made from laundry baskets?
I'm not really sure, but I'm going to push back on that because, like, going down to... In Florida and seeing the full size ones, those would be really big.
Would they just be huge laundry baskets? I've never seen one full in real life, so I don't know. But then I've not looked into the Gonk droids at all.
And then you know, it's like you know, C-3PO. There's these pistons on his legs, and those reappear on the Millennium Falcon. Those are the handles that are on the Millennium Falcon. You know, 3PO's body gets reused on a couple of different droids. There's different versions of R2 with different heads. My favorite one's the Imperial one with the clear dome, I always refer to as R2 see-through.
Yeah, this seems right, yeah.
You know, there's the mouse droid, which is a custom body, but it's like the chassis is a remote control car.
Yeah.
And on the sides, there are circuit boards out of computers because you can pretty clearly tell that the little memory chips and stuff.
And I also like the little connection between the mouse droid and the E-11 in that the little tubes that are sticking up on top of the mouse droid have never been identified. And two of those tubes are on the E-11 and they've also never been identified.
You know where else those tubes are?
Where?
On the land speeder, on Luke's land speeder.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that part has yet to be identified. Nobody knows what it came from.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, I've seen great photos of it, and I've stared at the real thing. And
it's going to be probably end up, if it ever gets discovered, which it may never, it's going to end up being some internal component that is just like something that carries another internal component inside of another machine. And they're just like, yeah, this will work. This looks cool. Because that's usually how those things got put together.
But, you know, again, I don't know if Droid Division has done the mouse droid, but there are people out there that, you know, are 3D printing all of this stuff. Like,
yeah. Well, our mutual friend Jose has made a mouse droid. And his mouse droid is actually really nice.
I used to have one a long time ago, and I think I sold it because I never was able to get the details the way I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I might revisit that once R2 gets done.
I think I'm right about this. Like, Matt Hobbs, the guy who does pretty much all of the Wally stuff. Like Wallys. He did a really awesome mouse droid as well. And I think the character is Babu Fisk from the latest Star Wars, the little tiny guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually rides inside of it.
Oh, so, that's
which
cool.
Which is kind of fun.
That's fun.
Because it's the same, it's the right size for him.
Yeah, is it Bobo Fisk?
Babu Fisk, something like that. I can't remember his name.
The person who, Shirley Henderson, does the voice of that, who plays Moaning Myrtle.
Mm-hmm. So, which is awesome.
I love her. She's amazing. I have a huge crush on her. But that goes back to Trainspotting. So,
right.
You know,
that's a callback right there.
Oh my God, yeah. So
this, what is it, 25 years ago that Trainspotting came out? 1995.
Something like
26
that.
Years ago.
I just remember Bob Dole throwing a fit about it. Like, it glorifies heroin. I'm like, did you see it?
Yeah, have you ever
watched
the movie?
I will never try heroin.
Right? Based on what they went through, I will never try heroin.
Yeah.
Or any other drugs like that.
You know, speaking of movie locations, when I was in Glasgow the last time, no, it was in Edinburgh. That's where that was filmed. It was in Edinburgh. When you say Edinburgh, it's not Edinburgh. It's not Edinburgh. It's Edinburgh with a question mark. Edinburgh. But like, there's the scenes at the very beginning of the movie where they're all running, and so I track that down, walk there with my parents. I'm like, just stay there, and so my wife and I walk down to the end. I'm like, I want you to videotape me running, and so like I'm running towards my parents, and like they're freaking out, thinking something's wrong, and I forgot to tell them that I was going to run up this hill
to replicate that scene from the movie. Yeah,
that's I'm a dork.
What? You're on a podcast about movie props, and you're like, this is your moment to tell everyone you're a dork.
I drugged them to the middle of nowhere, Wales, to find where the slaughtered lamb was.
Oh, wow.
So,
and in fairness, middle of nowhere Wales is anywhere in Wales.
Outside of Cardiff.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So the Slaughtered Lamb, if you're not familiar, is the bar from American Werewolf in London. So
I was actually just reading about Bob Burns some more, and he has a lot of the original animatronics from that movie.
Oh, nice.
And as is tradition, somebody just gave them to him. Because sure. That's just how it works with Bob Burns. Everybody just hands him stuff.
Here, Bob, you should have this.
You know what?
It's the most important thing in cinematic history.
Take this priceless prop and just keep it in your basement. Yeah. Like with the rest of them. Just stack it on top of that other stuff.
Oh, sure.
Like you do. Yeah. Good old Bob. Well, we are at the 45-minute mark, Greg.
Which they go is so quick.
I know, which is our traditional cutoff point. Is there anything else you want to bring up about Star Wars that you want that folks might find interesting?
You know, I just all of it to me is super interesting. You know, like Han Solo's greeblies on his belt, like he's got little CO2 cartridges there. You know, I don't know if it makes its appearance in A New Hope or not, but the Volvo dashboard panels. Litter the inside of the Millennium Falcon, which later also appear on the Han Solo Frozen Carbonite, which we'll talk about next time. And the Viscount light that used on R2-D2, R2-D2's dome, you see the light part. What you don't see is the back part of that light, and that is on the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, and I want to say it's also in the cockpit of the X-Wing.
Mm-hmm.
Lightsabers. There is a lightsaber on the dashboard of the X-Wing, but it is not the Graflex. It is what was referred to as the Graflight, which is also the same lightsaber that Luke uses in the Christmas holiday special. because he uses a totally different lightsaber
in that.
And I don't have that one in my collection, and I keep thinking I need to do it, but...
You do. So. Just accept it.
I need a graph light.
You need a graph light.
Yeah.
I will bring up one of my favorite things about the filming models before we duck out, and that's the Y-Wing.
Oh, yeah.
The domes on the front of the engine pylons. Those are the... The legs pantyhose holders, the little egg cups they came in. And that was that's actually how some people have some of the original guys that were replicating those models. That's how they determined scale on a lot of stuff. Was they got those, and then from those they were able to determine scale.
Nice,
which is kind of cool. Is there any social media you want to plug there, bud?
You know, just again, check out. You know, you're going to add links to Blaster Factory and Droid Divit. Definitely check out my buddy Dave. If you're 3D printing things and you want to 3D print droids, buy his files and don't be a dick and give them away or sell them because this is kind of I think this is kind of what he does for a living now, and you know, like as an artist, let's support him. You know, of course, Prop Store of London, always check them out. Locations in London, England, and Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, our unofficial sponsor.
And, of course, make sure you check out Michael Corey on Props to History on TikTok.
And any social media now, you can check out all of my work at Props to History. I've completely switched over to that now.
Nice.
As well as, of course, this podcast on any of the podcasting's medias that you look for. And you can also get on YouTube and check out some of the stuff I do on youtube.com/ Props to History. And then that's pretty much it for us tonight. So thank you again for watching.
Yeah. Well, listening, because I don't really watch.
Well, yeah. Listen to me.
We should do a TV show.
We should do a TV show, bud.
That would be awesome. Then people could see the things I'm talking about.
Right.
And I probably wouldn't have a microphone in front of me.
Yeah, but we'd still both run into everything.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. But anyway, thanks for listening. This has been the Prop History Podcast.